Welcome to Breaking Through with me, Kristen Rau Finkbeiner, powered by Moms Rising on the We Act Radio Network, TuneIn's Progressive Voices Network, the Union Edge Radio Network, and stations across the nation. I am so glad you're listening. Once again, we have a really great show for you. We have U.S. Representative Chu coming on talking about the tax package of doom, the no good, very bad, awful, horrible, just absolutely devastating tax package that Republicans have proposed and what you can do about it, importantly. Next up, we talk about gun safety in America, how we can advance gun safety, how other countries have advanced safety, and how we can advance gun safety here, too. And then we talk about what's going on with Donald Trump's appointments. Boo! His HHS appointment is like having a fox guard the hen house. So we talk about that appointment, why it matters to you, what you can do. Again, talking about what you can do, and we close the show talking about Thanksgiving, Giving Tuesday, and all of the ways that we are rising up with power together. I'm so glad you're listening. We're going to jump right in with our first guest right now. U.S. Representative Judy Chu, welcome.
Thank you, Kristen. It was wonderful being in this press conference with you with regard to the GOP tax plan. And I just really have to say you've got so many moms from Moms Rising to be there and to provide very moving testimony as to how this tax plan would negatively affect them. So thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you. And thank you for also serving on the very, very powerful House Ways and Means Committee, which actually has jurisdiction over taxes. And so the tax plan passed the U.S. House recently. It's awful.
Yes.
It's terrible. It has most of the benefits going to the top 1%. And what do you think it's going to take to stop it? And actually, let's first say, what are the things that you hate the most about it? What should everybody know about this tax plan?
Well, first of all, it's a huge tax giveaway for corporations, billionaires, and the most wealthy in this nation. They are ones that get the greatest benefit. In fact, in 2027, 50% of the benefits go to the top 1% of this country. And 27% of the people will actually have to pay more taxes.
So, more taxes.
The middle class is the one that pays for all these tax cuts to the corporations and to the wealthiest in this country. It will make it harder for middle-class families to be able to make ends meet. Just some examples of the deductions that would be cut for the middle class. I would say that the worst is the elimination of the medical expense deduction, which is used by people who are truly struggling, those with the most difficult medical needs. And it hurts people who have family members with Alzheimer's. Of course, we know that the expenses are very great, and that the only way that they are able to keep themselves from bankruptcy is to be able to use this this deduction. But it also hurts families with young children. And in fact, I was just so very moved by the people in the press conference who came, particularly the family with Jackson, who was born with spina bifida, which cost his parents millions of dollars in surgeries and medical devices to help get him healthy and independent. The amount of money that it cost has been very difficult on the family, but because they were able to use the state and local tax deduction, the real estate tax deduction, as well as the deduction on the interest on the mortgage, and, of course, the medical expense deduction, they were able to deal with it. And they are able to still continue to take care of two children with special needs.
Yeah, I mean, this whole tax package is so bad. It starves the federal budget in ways that are sure to put Medicare, Medicaid, Head Start, and other essential programs on the chopping block, as it does things like gives tax deductions, increased tax deductions for private jets, for golf courses. It gives deductions for pens and pencils in corporations, but not to teachers, you know, and we can see where this is coming from.
That is such an important point, because teachers would no longer be able to deduct the cost of things that they buy for their children in the classroom. Pens, pencils. Well, of course, I had a teacher in my area that said that she used this deduction to buy cartridges for their printer and dirt for their science experiments. So these are things that she doesn't expect to be paid or reimbursed for, but the deduction helps her afford this. On the other hand, corporations can deduct any of the things that they deem their business expenses. You're right. It could include jets. It could include fancy stays in hotels. This is clearly something that is only good for the upper echelon of this country and not for the middle class.
And it's ridiculous because it's the Republicans pretending that trickle-down economics is going to work now when it never has in the past. When we've tried these types of policies decades ago, we found that it actually hurt our economy. And they're trying it again. And one of the things that's important is 72% of our economy is based on consumer spending. And if you suck the vacuum cleaner of money out of the middle class and of all other classes and put it up to the 1%, then we're actually hurting the entire economy. We're not helping the economy. Trickle down does not work. What's your take on that?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up, because the 2001 and 2003 Bush tax cuts were based on the trickle down economy, and it did not work. In fact, there was a very, very weak economy after those particular tax cuts, and we had a huge deficit that we are still paying for to this day. But the most dramatic example of the trickle-down economy not working is in Kansas. In Kansas, they decided to do many of the same things that they are doing right now, which is to give tax cuts to the wealthy and to have what's called a pass-through income. And to just basically give money to those on top, assuming that those on top would somehow create more jobs. Well, guess what? It did not work. In fact, immediately there was a deficit in the budget. In fact, the budget for that state was devastated, so much so that they had to make very many brutal cuts, including cuts to school districts, so much so that some school districts actually went to 4 days a week instead of five. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's brutal. And the thing is that the Republicans are trying to tell the American people that this is a bill for us. This is a bill for our economy, when we absolutely know it's not. We absolutely know that that's not what's happening. And one of the things that I think Donald Trump has been selling is he's been trying to say that we're a zero-sum gain country, where if one person does better, then somebody else is doing worse. And that is not true. We are not a zero-sum gain country. The tax plan actually is taking an axe to the American dream, because we all together add up to make the American dream possible and to make our economy prosper. So this whole situation is actually taking an axe to the American dream. There was a researcher at MIT, an economist, who found that because we have such a high wealth gap right now already, before this tax plan is in place, we have such a big wealth gap between the very, very rich and the rest of us, that we're actually approaching a third world economy, where our economy kind of implodes. Again, that's because we're a consumer-based economy. 72% of our GDP is based on consumer spending. So if people don't have money to spend because the vacuum cleaner of the top 1% has sucked up all the funds and locked it away in a bank instead of put it in circulation in our economy, then we all lose out. We all lose out, even the top 1%, who, you know, would maybe need to have a functioning economy too, right? And so I just can't even believe that the Republicans are going forward with this. It's really, really, really just blows my mind. What is the feeling on Capitol Hill? Are people sort of like, what are you thinking? This is not even logically smart. This doesn't work economically. When you do the numbers, it doesn't add up to prosperousness for our whole country. What's the feeling on Capitol Hill?
Well, first of all, I do want to point out that this is just step one to this tax plan. This was the vote in the House. Then they go to the Senate. Then there's a conference committee, and then we vote on the conference committee. then it has to be signed in by the president. So we can raise our voices about how we feel about this tax plan, and we can make a difference. But I can also say that I am so incredibly angry and disappointed at those Republicans who will be hard hit in their districts. I mean, for instance, in California, because of the elimination of the state and local tax deduction, these districts will be very, very much hard hit because they're the ones who utilize it the most. And I could not believe yesterday when I saw those very same California Republicans vote for this tax plan, which will hurt thousands of people in their district who will pay more taxes.
Yes, yes, it's ridiculous. So what can people do?
So they can reach out to their Congress members. They can say how much they are against this tax plan. They can make sure that people around the country know that this is not a tax plan for the middle class, and that, in fact, it is just for the top 1% in this country and a big tax giveaway to corporations. Because I think that people really need to understand that. You are right. They're kind of selling the American people bill of goods by saying this is for the middle class, when the total opposite is actually true. So we have to make sure that we raise our voices, whether it's in town halls, whether it's on webcasts like this, and whether it's to our friends and neighbors. And we also have to make sure that our Congress members know how we feel about that. You know, I talked about how incredibly disappointed I was in the California Republicans. If they heard from each of their constituents as to how those constituents feel about this, I think they might think twice about it. And I think that this dynamic could occur in every district of this country.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody needs to make a phone call. And we have a line set up at Moms Rising, 1-844-633-2048. Again, 1-844-633-2048. That is a line where you call and we'll connect you directly with your member of Congress and we'll give you a little talking point that you can use. And then you just take 30 seconds and make a big impact. As the people of the United States of America, were able to hold the line on rolling back access to healthcare coverage. We did it. We held the line more than once. So now we need to hold the line on stopping this ridiculously horrible tax package that really destroys our economy and destroys the American dream. Do you think there's hope in stopping this? Do you think it's possible?
I think it's possible. In the Senate, I see that there are some senators that have reservations about this. In fact, one senator has already come out on the Republican side and said that he's not going to vote for it. They can only afford to lose three. And Susan Collins is another one that's expressed reservations. Now the Senate has said that they want to eliminate the individual mandate in the Affordable Care Act. Now they're starting to hurt healthcare. So actually, they're going backwards. They're hurting healthcare, which is something we spent the first part of this year fighting. So now that they're getting into that, there could be other senators that will vote no on this particular tax plan. So yes, we have a chance in the Senate to have them stop it. Let's make sure that we have at least three Republican senators that say no.
So especially if you live in a district with a Republican senator, make that call right now, 1-844-633-2048. And if you live in a district with a Democratic senator, make the call too. I've heard from so many senators that when you call, they tabulate the number of calls and then they talk about it on the floor. You know, they're able to say, hey, guess what? All of my constituents are calling, so we got to do something together. So no matter if you are a Democrat district or Republican district, make the call. It all adds up. And tell your friends, family, and neighbors to call. If you want to find the number, it's on the Moms Rising Facebook page. It's on the Moms Rising Twitter account, and it's 1-844-633-2048. So everybody needs to call. When people call your office, do you pay attention?
Are you kidding? I truly pay attention. I actually get a report from my staff every few days on how the calls are going. And I always talk about that when I give my speeches on the floor and when I'm talking in committee about why I have a particular position on something. It is very, very powerful for you to raise your voices, whether it's through email, Twitter, Facebook, through a letter, or through a call. All of it works.
All of it. All of it. Yes, raising your voice works, and we've seen it work time and time again. We've seen us be able to hold the line. I think on healthcare is a big, big, big example, because the Republicans leadership in the House wanted to pass that. The Republican leadership in the Senate wanted to pass that, and the Donald Trump wanted to pass that. But we were able to hold the line through people making calls and speaking out as a country. And this bill, actually this tax bill, we just saw data coming out that it would kick 13 million people off healthcare. So this is a backdoor way of getting rid of healthcare once again.
Yes, that elimination of the individual mandate means that 13 million people will be kicked off their health care. And not only that, your premiums will rise by 10%. How about that?
Ridiculous.
That's terrible.
It's ridiculous. Terrible. This is the most ridiculous bill on the planet. I am so anti this bill. So thank you so much for being on. Thanks for all that you do. Thanks for firing us up. Thanks for letting us know that members of Congress do pay attention when we call. And thank you, thank you, thank you for being a champion for working women, for families, and for the economy of the United States of America.
Well, thank you, and I am so much in awe of Moms Rising. Thank you for getting over a million moms to be in this fight, to mobilize like this, and to raise your voices on these very, very critical issues for our nation.
We're going to take a quick break, but stick around. We'll be right back with our next guest, who's going to talk about gun safety, what we can do to increase gun safety and decrease mass shootings in the United States of America. It's an important segment. I'm so glad you're listening. We'll be back in a quick flash. Welcome back to Breaking Through with me, Kristen Rao Finkbeiner, powered by Moms Rising on the We Act Radio Network, TuneIn's Progressive Voices Network, and the Union Edge Radio Network and stations across the nation. We are delighted to have a gun safety expert joining us today, Timothy Johnson, who is with Media Matters. Welcome, Timothy.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for being on. So we continue in the United States of America to have an epidemic of gun violence, an absolute epidemic. This morning, I just, right before we got you on the phone, Googled shootings, and tons of things came up in the news. Way too many things came up on the news. What is the latest in terms of if you think we're ever going to advance policies like background checks in a universal way, like stopping high-capacity magazines and military-style assault weapons? What do you think is going to happen?
Right. So, well, there was actually a policy development yesterday. There's a bipartisan bill introduced to improve the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, which is if you do a gun sale through a dealer, which not all sales are done, that's where you get the background check. So, unfortunately, a lot of records are missing from that for various reasons, including states just not submitting them. So, in terms of policy, that looks like, you know, it has a very good chance to go forward. So if you talk about background checks and high-capacity magazine bans, you know, Congress is stuck on that. You know, if you look at the policies, they're very popular. I saw a poll, background checks now has hit 95%. I haven't looked at magazine bans in a while, but usually that's in, you know, the 70s or so. So I think that that will take some time. You're going to need Congress to come in line with public opinion. And one problem with that is that even though they're extremely popular, the NRA opposes expanding background checks and opposes the magazine ban. So I think you know, that's going to take some time. You're going to have a cultural shift in Congress. When people kind of raise this issue, you know, one thing I bring up is that the Brady Bill actually took maybe something like 7 years to get done. So these things do take a while. Overall, I'd be optimistic just because they're so overwhelmingly popular, but it may be a bit, you know, later than we want to see.
Yeah, I mean, but these things have been happening for quite a long time in terms of the pushes. I mean, I've been working in this area for a long, long time, and background checks have been popular for a long time. And one of the things I think is important is that in the statistics that you mentioned, the data, the polling that you mentioned, NRA members overwhelmingly support background checks. It's the NRA leadership that's out of step. And really, that is a giant problem. How do you think we're going to address the fact that the NRA leadership is out of step with their membership?
So, yeah, this plays into something that we write about at Media Matters is obviously, you know, NRA leadership has a lot of influence over Republicans in Congress. And there's kind of this notion we see in the media a lot that the reason for this is that elected officials feel that if they don't go along with the NRA's agenda, no matter how unpopular it is that they will lose their elections because during election season, the NRA will come after them. And actually, there's really no evidence for this. You know, you look at the Virginia elections a couple weeks ago for just a couple examples, but people have actually done regression analyses of, you know, multiple congressional cycles and found that the NRA's endorsement and spending is highly overrated. So I think, you know, in terms of, you know, how can we stop leadership from impacting Congress, I think it's, you know, you have to inform members of Congress and you have to just inform the public that the NRA is, you know, kind of like a paper tiger.
Yeah, that's true. I like that. They're a paper tiger. That is so true. I have to tell you, that is so true. I love thinking of the NRA as a paper tiger compared to how they talk about things. Now, speaking of paper tigers, we do know that some countries, when they saw mass shootings happen, made changes in their laws and mass shootings ended. Can you share a little bit of insight on what policies made mass shootings end in other nations?
Well, yeah, I think so. The most famous example of this is Australia that had, a series of terrible mass shootings, and they really cracked down. They basically banned some types of semi-automatic rifles, and then they have very intense licensing and registration for other weapons. And so I think, if you look at a lot of the countries, maybe look at Northern European countries where there's still kind of a lot of guns there, you know, not as high gun ownership as the United States, certainly, but it's still pretty high. And what they have done is, you know, licensing and registration. We know, you know, I think on the federal level, you got to start with improving NICS and you do background checks. But on the state level, we know, some states have done licensing and registration, and it's really cut down on the amount of gun violence. So I think, you know, that's something to move towards if you want to dramatically reduce gun violence.
Yeah, yeah. And let's talk about bump stocks. So we saw in Las Vegas a weapon be turned into a weapon of mass destruction with a bump stock. So a bump stock turns a semi-automatic or a not automatic weapon, I don't actually know this answer, into an automatic, basically, because it allows the repetitive firing to happen. And I heard, oh yes, yay, maybe we can get rid of bump stocks, but that seems to have stalled. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it has. So there's supposed to be a hearing this week, or it's postponed. And I guess I'll give a little background. So there's a law passed that, you know, in the United States, it actually is legal to own a machine gun, but they're extremely highly regulated. And I think a lot of people credit the degree of regulation with why you don't see a lot of, machine guns used in crime. So a few years ago, this bump fire stock was invented, and it allows you basically to take a regular semi-auto, which in some states, you know, there's not very much regulation at all, and basically approach the fire rate of a fully automatic weapon. It makes you extremely inaccurate and all of that, but, you know, if you're going to carry out a massacre against a crowd, you know, that doesn't matter. So, yeah, after the Las Vegas shooting, where the government used, I think, up to 12 of these devices, Republicans seemed open to regulating them, but then kind of went silent. And what's most disheartening is that Paul Ryan is following the NRA line. And what the NRA said after Vegas is, you know, we don't want legislation to ban bump fire stocks. We want the ATF to regulate them. And unfortunately, the ATF can't regulate them because they haven't been given the authority by Congress. The reason being that the bump fire stock itself doesn't count as a gun under, you know, the statutory definition of a firearm. So basically, the NRA wants to look like, it's willing to do something, but their solution is a total dead end. You know, we thought, well, what are Republicans in Congress going to do? Then you hear Paul Ryan saying the exact same thing as the NRA. So, yeah, I wouldn't rule it out totally because there is a hearing scheduled. At the same time, you know, you have Ryan adopting the NRA line, and, you know, of course, we know a hearing is no guarantee of legislation. I think it's something to keep an eye on, but, you know, I think Republicans are going to fall in line with the NRA on it, and we'll have to change that if there's actually going to be legislation on it.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the things I think, though, is when we're talking about a change in culture in Congress, we're really talking about a change in Congress. I mean, I think that people need to start looking at who's taking the most money from the NRA, who has a 100% voting record with the NRA, who's out of step with their constituents, knowing that their constituents want actually things like an end to bump stocks, want things like universal background checks, want things like a stop of selling military-style assault weapons with high-capacity magazines, and vote for the people who follow the constituents' line, not the NRA leadership line. And again, the NRA membership is out of step with the NRA leadership. And we have, for example, at Moms Rising, tons of people who are hunters, who responsibly enjoy hunting, duck hunting, elk hunting, all kinds of hunting, and are NRA members who do not agree with the NRA leadership, who want responsible gun use, who don't want to have their kids subjected to actually having to worry about being shot if they go to the movies, if they're in school, if they're, you know, at a rock concert, any of these recent places, at church. You know, we shouldn't have to worry about our safety at church. This is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it doesn't have to be this way. Many countries do not have the same degree of gun violence that we do here. And it's just astonishing to me that at the same time this high level of gun violence is happening in our country, we recently in Congress had a push to get rid of the bans on silencers. Now, silencers, when they are used, make it so that people can't tell where the shooting is coming from. And that's even worse, right? So this whole situation is just absurd. And I invite people to keep paying attention and voting people out of office who are voting out of step with safety. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, one interesting thing about the silencer bill is that, so this has been one of the only gun lobby priorities that's actually been pushed through this year that's actually moving. But every time they try to hold a hearing, there's a mass shooting, and then they cancel the hearing. So I think, you know, all I would have to say about that bill is that they know that it's so out of touch with what people want that they can't do it when the spotlight is on it. You know, they're hoping to do it kind of in secret, but we have so many of these high-profile shootings that they can't really do it. And, you know, all it really is that, you know, they're framing it as like a medical issue. Basically, gun manufacturers have declining sales because they've, you know, for even before Trump came into office, they've had years of just trying to sell more and more guns to the same people. And to do that, you have to come up with more and more products. It's like how you see, you know, assault weapons have been heavily marketed because, you know, you got to sell something new to a guy who already has a dozen handguns. So, yeah, the silencer thing is just the latest thing in that. You know, we need a new accessory, and it's just, you know, for the profit of the gun industry.
Yeah, and it's bad. It's bad. It is for the profit of the gun industry. We also have massive saturation of gun ownership in the United States of America. We have the highest levels of gun ownership, I believe, in the world, right? And people own multiple guns, not just one, but multiple. And so that's the other situation that we have going on here. And can you talk about that, the high saturation of gun ownership?
Yeah, so that's going to be a hurdle and causing the gun violence problem to go down quickly. I still think you can have a change over time. But yeah, we do have extremely high gun ownership, and high gun availability is linked to rates of gun violence. But the interesting thing, though, is that it's a relatively small number of people who are owning all these guns. So, one thing to be optimistic about is that there's a poll that comes out every year that actually measures household gun ownership. And that's been going down for 40 or so years. But if you look at the total number of guns sold, that, you know, it's actually dipped recently. But that overall, if you looked at, you know, a couple decade trend, that has gone up a lot. So, yeah, basically you have, you know, very few people owning, you know, many, many of the guns.
Yeah. And one of the things is that when the Constitution was written, we were talking about muskets. Now we have weapons of mass destruction. It's illegal for people to own a tank or a rocket launcher or, you know, a fighter jet. And some of these weapons that people are using, and we've seen used in places like Las Vegas, are actually somewhat similar in their capacity to cause massive death. And so sometimes there's this false argument about, oh, you people are just trying to take away all guns. That is not the case. We people are trying to make sure there is gun safety, responsible gun use, and responsible access to guns that don't kill a million trillion people like a fighter jet, you know? And so that Second Amendment conversation, and when the Second Amendment was written, and when we were talking about these things, I always like to remember that we were talking about including in our founding documents a well-regulated militia. I'm like, hello, well-regulated was right there, right next to the Second Amendment. And, you know, we've evolved in our technologies, and we got to evolve in our regulations and our well-regulated regulations so that our children are safe, our families are safe, our loved ones are safe, we are safe. I feel like that's a violation of my constitutional right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And what do you think about that?
You know, I think that is a very good point. You know, people do have a right to live in safe communities. But yeah, I think people need to make that point more often because I think it makes perfect sense. I mean, even if you look at the Heller decision, you know, they said, you know, Scalia in his decision said that the Second Amendment was not unlimited. And basically where it stands now is that the Supreme Court has said that there's a right for law-abiding people to have a gun in the home for the purpose of self-defense. So, you know, that's actually way out of touch with what the NRA says, where they say, you know, any little thing is an infringement. But, you know, the Second Amendment is not unique among amendments. All of them are subject to some levels of regulation.
Yeah, I love it. Some levels of regulation are fine, including, you know, like, I should not be able to own a fighter jet. Where do you think it ends? Where do you think it stops? I mean, we have had this change in technology, a change, and we're talking about, you know, people are inventing bump stocks. They're always inventing new things. Where do you think we should end the regulation? You know, how do you think we should come in and say, hello, this is not, one thing is not like the other. We're talking about apples and oranges here. You know, it's one thing to have a hunting rifle where you can kill a duck or something like that and eat the duck or stuff it or whatever you're going to do. And it's another thing to have like a fully automatic weapon with bump stock due to a bump stock. And there is no duck left after you have shot the duck, right? I mean, like, where do you think the line is here?
Well, I think what's interesting, I think in the Heller framework, which, you know, even a lot of liberals don't like, I think you could still do, you know, something similar to Canada or Northern Europe. You know, I know there's a debate about whether it's an individual right or a militia right. Even, you know, taking the individual right where it stands now, you can still do a lot. And I would say, you know, you emulate other countries. You know, we're not going to be exactly the same because I think there's no one size fits all. But yeah, I mean, taking weapons out of the hands of people that can cause destruction, you know, weapons of war, things that people do not need to exercise what the Second Amendment right is. And then, you know, I think you have background checks, but then you have licensing and registration. You know, trafficking is also, I think, a component. You know, there's many components to this. As we saw in the Northern California shooting, you know, being good about going and collecting guns from people who are prohibited. So I think there's a myriad different policy areas you can work on. But basically, you know, making sure that people who are responsible are the ones owning the guns and cracking down the transfer from those people to others.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are out of time with you. What are the steps that people who are outraged that the NRA is out of step with the American public, but in step with many members of Congress, what should they do?
Well, I think just keep working on closing the intensity gap. You know, you saw the Virginia election, the gun issue on both sides had equal intensity, which we haven't seen before. So I guess, you know, just get involved and, you know, speak up on the other side. You know, the NRA likes to trot out a lot of people, you know, you're going to take my gun, you know, which isn't true, blah, blah, blah. I think, you know, we need people out there saying, you know, we want to live in safe communities. You know, we support these policies.
Absolutely. So make phone calls, go out there, tell your member of Congress you want safe policy, share your story about why you want gun safety. Thanks so much for being on with us today. Thanks for talking. Timothy Johnson, Media Matters.
All right, thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, but don't go away because next up we're talking about the fox guarding the hen house and Donald Trump's broken campaign promises. Lots of important conversation there. We'll be right back in a quick moment. Welcome back to Breaking Through with me, Kristen Rau Finkbeiner, powered by Moms Rising on the We Act Radio Network, TuneIn's Progressive Voices Network, and on the Union Edge and other stations across the nation. I have to tell you, people, we are recording early this week, and I have many times said nations across the station. So I'm proud of myself that I got it right that time. We are on right now with Andrew Bates from American Bridge to talk about a ridiculous, very bad, no good, horrible, awful new nomination for Health and Human Services Secretary by Donald Trump, who I like to call the malignant Cheeto, Alex Azar. So Alex Azar is being promoted as somebody who will help lower the price of prescription drugs. However, in reality, he is the person who in real life has actually done things like helped raise the price of insulin to epic levels of cost, making insulin, which is something people need, many diabetics need in order to live, nearly unaffordable. What's your take on the current situation of ridiculousness?
I think it's extremely troubling that Donald Trump identified real problems that are happening with the rising cost of prescription drugs that are impacting working people, middle class people across the country on the campaign trail. Yet when we look at how he's behaved once he's in power, he has stocked his administration with so many prominent former pharmaceutical executives and lobbyists. And Alex Azar is both of those things. He oversaw lobbying at the pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly, which is where he would be hired directly from if he is confirmed. He would be the 189th former lobbyist the Trump administration has brought on if he is indeed confirmed. He also served in a variety of other lobbying roles for the pharmaceutical industry prior to his time in the Bush administration. And so I think that this is, like I said, alarming, and there is no doubt that Azar is being brought on to help Donald Trump continue to undermine the Affordable Care Act in ways that is raising health care out-of-pocket costs for people all over the country.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those weird situations where the term gaslighting comes into mind, because during the campaign trail, Donald Trump said many things. We all heard him say many things, some I wish I hadn't heard. But he said, quote, drug makers are getting away with murder, and he promised to get rising drug prices under control, end quote. And then he goes and he hires somebody who is, as you noted, a lobbyist and who's been accused of actually colluding to drive up the cost of insulin. And so it's so ridiculous, because we also heard Donald Trump say, oh, I want to be elected and I'll drain the swamp, right? Well, he has filled the swamp with more lobbyists. He's creating a swamp. It's not even filled the swamp. He's building a swamp, right? By hiring more and more and more and more lobbyists and hiring insiders. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. I can't even. I just, you know, it's one of those parts of news that you almost can't stand to read because it's so awful. So, you know, saying one thing and doing the exact opposite and then saying, what happened? That's, you know, kind of gaslighting. What do you think?
That's right. I think it parallels what we saw with opioids, because on the campaign trail, as you know, he talked about how tragic the opioid epidemic is and it's killing so many Americans needlessly across the country. And he promised them relief, and they need relief to help end this catastrophe. However, despite repeatedly promising to declare a national emergency on opioids, he broke that promise. He did not deliver the billions of dollars in aid that a national emergency declaration would have meant, as well as the other federal resources. And instead, he announced a narrow set of bureaucratic changes that most authorities, people even on his own opioid commission, have said are extremely inadequate. And so this is a trend that has been seen in several very important areas where he promised one thing in order to convince people to vote for him on the trail, yet then once he came into power, we have not seen him follow through. And instead, unfortunately, in the case of Azar and pharmaceutical drugs, it looks like he's gone in the opposite direction, just like you've seen broadly on his sabotage of Obamacare.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the sabotage of Obamacare. This is a bad week for sabotage for Obamacare. First, the proposed tax policy of doom, which combined with the proposed budget actually eviscerates Medicaid and Medicare, upon which the Affordable Care Act stands. And then we just saw a repeal of the individual mandate in the ACA thrown into this tax policy, which would kick off 13 million people from healthcare coverage and undermine the whole platform for healthcare by making it unstable because it would make healthy people not be involved with unhealthy people, and so it would destabilize the whole thing. So we have a situation of doom there, too, where they're trying to backdoor eviscerate the Affordable Care Act, even after the whole entire country, Democrats and Republicans alike, in every state in the nation, have recently rose up to say, please do not take away our health care. They're still trying to take away the health care, this time through a backdoor with taxes. Very similar to this, you know, where they're saying one thing. Oh, OK, we heard you. OK, now in the tax bill, we're going to eviscerate it while we think you're not looking. You know, it's frustrating. And what's your take on the recent attempts to demolish access to health care this week?
I think eviscerate is a very good term for it. The Senate tax plan,
sadly,
which passed the Finance Committee last night, we now know would deprive 13 million Americans of their health care coverage while raising premiums across the board. Because if you take out the individual mandate, you effectively gut the health insurance marketplaces and you make it impossible to continue protecting people with pre-existing conditions. And obviously, that is one of the most important protections the Affordable Care Act brought about for people. It's one of the most popular things that is accomplished. And if you take a step back, we all know that on the campaign trail, Trump promised he would cover everybody, make healthcare less expensive, and maintain the ACA's coverage protections for people suffering from pre-existing conditions such as Alzheimer's, such as cancer. But the repeal and replace plans that he has supported throughout his time in office would all take coverage from tens of millions of Americans, make out-of-pocket costs skyrocket, and gut coverage for pre-existing conditions to cut taxes for the rich. And we've seen this be an obsessive trend across his whole time. None of these would deliver on his promises. They break all of his promises. If you look at the House tax plan, for example, that cuts $25 billion from Medicare. When Donald Trump declared his candidacy for office, he said he would not cut Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. And beginning with his very first week in office, we've seen him misuse his executive powers to do things like undermine the ability to enforce the individual mandate, take away subsidies from the health insurance marketplaces that are vital to keep out-of-pocket costs low for working people. And now you have so many independent authorities, America's doctors, healthcare providers, the insurance industry itself, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, all confirming that his actions are the reason that you have premiums going up all over the country by, say, 30% in Pennsylvania or 14% in my home state of North Carolina. And so I think it's a travesty, and clearly the elections last week in Virginia, New Jersey, in Maine, all show voters know what he is doing and strongly object to it and are going to come out and make their voices heard.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that is something we need to keep in mind about elections. We need to make sure that we're registered to vote. People, I have news. Of all people who were eligible to vote, only 27% voted for Donald Trump. So he came in with 27% of the vote. You might ask, how is he president of the United States of America with 27% of the vote? I'll tell you. Many people who are eligible to vote aren't registered to vote. And many people who are registered to vote aren't voting. So now is the time to drop your assumptions that your friends, family, neighbors, and maybe even children are registered to vote if they're over 18. And make sure that we get people registered to vote now, not just in an emergency right before the main elections happen. Now is the time to start doing voter registration, voter education, voter engagement, because the upcoming elections are going to be so critical to actually draining the swamp that the malignant Cheeto, also known as the President Trump, has created. We see people time and time again say, oh, it doesn't matter who is in the Oval Office. That person is just a figurehead. Well, we see now that that is not true, right? We know that who is in the Oval Office makes a difference in our domestic policy, in our international policy, in our safety, in our ability to have access to health care, in our ability to treat all immigrant families with fairness and to understand that it is the diversity of our country that is actually what makes us strong, innovative, and prosperous, not the opposite. All of that all of that is coming out of the tone of the Oval Office. And it also matters who's in our city, county, state, and federal offices in Congress. And so make sure right now that everyone you know is registered to vote. And then when it comes time to vote, have a party. Have a voting party. If you vote by mail in your state, have a party to vote together. It's fun. I promise. It's so much fun. And if you vote in person in your state, go together and have a party. You can like stand in line and have a party. Bring a little music. You know, it's fun. Snacks. Voting snacks are good. What's your advice to people who are freaked out about the current situation of doom?
I think that it's important to keep in mind the kind of engagement that's been encouraged by groups like Moms Rising and other progressives who have brought attention to Trump's sabotage of the Affordable Care Act, as well as Republican legislative attempts to repeal it. And like we just talked about, now the Senate tax plan would effectively do that by gutting it, by removing the individual mandate. I think that it's important to keep that energy going, to do all that you can to contact your members of Congress and let them know that you will hold them accountable at the ballot box if they vote for these disastrous plans. It would cause such agony for people all over our country. One success, in addition to the elections of Democratic governors in Virginia and New Jersey and the expansion of Medicaid in Maine, is that despite Trump's sabotage and his reducing of funding for Affordable Care Act promotion, ads, and outreach, we've still seen an historically high level of signups so far through the open enrollment period that recently started, and hopefully that will continue. But I would say the most important thing in the lead up to the midterm elections next year is to stay engaged and to protest the Senate tax plan that, like I mentioned, would take care from 13 million people and make premiums go up across the board, even for people that have employer-based coverage and who are not on the exchanges. We have seen that if people get engaged and show up and call and protest, it really does have an amazing effect, and that has stopped so many Americans from losing coverage and getting into dire financial straits as a result.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up that we're in an open enrollment period. The open enrollment period has been shortened, people. So go to www.healthcare.gov, right? And sign up for healthcare right now, www.healthcare.gov. And also, you should call your member of Congress right now at 1-844-633-2048. Thank you so much. Thanks for being on. Do you have any more advice, final advice, final parting advice?
No, I just want to say thank you for all the work that you're doing to make sure that people keep these life-saving gains the Affordable Care Act brought to them. I know that you know it's so important, and thank you to all of your listeners for also caring about this.
Yes, absolutely. And again, open enrollment is now. It ends December 15th. It's at www.healthcare.gov. If you need healthcare insurance or you know anybody who does, www.healthcare.gov. The open enrollment ends December 15th. So do it now. Pass the word around. Thanks so much for all you do.
Appreciate you having me.
We're going to take a quick break, but don't go away. Next up, we're talking about Thanksgiving, what we're thankful for, Giving Tuesday, and the power of you, we, and us together in the United States of America and our democracy. We'll be back in a quick moment. Welcome back to Breaking Through with me, Kristen Rao Finkbeiner, powered by Moms Rising on the We Act Radio Network, TuneIn's Progressive Voices Network, the Union Edge Radio Network, and stations across the nation. We're joined right now by the spectacular, amazing, awesome Anita Sarah Jackson, who is the Moms Rising Digital Media Director. Welcome, Anita.
Thank you, Kristen.
I am so glad you're on. So, what is your most favorite thing about being Director of Digital Communications at Moms Rising?
Oh, my gosh, that's a great question. Well, there are so many things to love about it, but I think one of the most exciting parts about it is how dynamic the organization is. So it means for digital communications that we are constantly updating our blog, constantly adding to our website, changing the homepage, putting out all this amazing social media content, and it's just a lot of fun. There's, you know, so much information coming through. Our members are doing so much. There's so many beautiful pictures of them at events and, you know, having on the ground meetings. And so there's just a lot of ways that it's just, it gives me life to see all the things our members are doing and to be able to highlight it.
It is so fun, actually. I love seeing the pictures of our members doing lots of amazing things and having such an impact at the city level, at the county level, at the state level, and at the federal level. Just this week, Moms Rising took over Capitol Hill on so many different issue areas. I mean, really, and having just such a profound impact. What this week was the most inspiring to you that everybody should take a look at on our Facebook page or on our Twitter?
Oh, my gosh. That's a hard question. This is a tough interview because I don't know that I could actually pick just one. There definitely, you know, the tax reform events, the congressional briefing on Capitol Hill, where we heard Leader Pelosi kick it off by thanking Moms Rising members for being so engaged. You know, right there, it told me that leaders are listening. They can really hear us when members share their stories. And it was just such an exciting moment. And then just to hear members themselves come up to the microphone and share their personal stories, it's just wonderful to see people be able to share their stories and see how they can have an impact on not only their own families and communities, but families across the nation. And, you know, that's so validating to have our voices be heard in that way. You know, there was also a briefing on immigration. There is a community gathering in Brooklyn in support of, you know, immigrants and temporary protected status. There's so much going on, and our members are speaking up in so many different ways.
I love it. I love it so much. And I do agree that they're speaking up in so many different ways. It's so fun to see that it's not just being there in person that is shown as being a powerful way to speak up, but when people share their story online, you know, just filling in this little box online about what happened to you with WIC, with SNAP, which is food stamps, with healthcare, with any of the policies that are on the chopping block right now, including childcare, that we then deliver those voices in the form of storybooks directly to leaders at the very top, directly in Washington, D.C. and in the district. And it has a profound and powerful impact. And then sometimes we have our members come forward and share their stories with us as well, as we did many times this week too. People sharing their stories about how not being able to take a medical deduction as is being proposed in the ridiculously harmful, very bad, horrible tax package put forward by Republicans, you know, having those stories be shared has such a profound impact too. So you don't have to be there in person. You can be right there online digitally, you know, at 2 a.m. And we are like the postal service of advocacy people. We deliver rain, snow, sleet, sunshine even. We deliver. My favorite is probably delivery in sunshine. I've had some snow deliveries even this week. But it's a really inspiring and powerful thing to watch the impact of stories, because you think like, oh, maybe my story won't make a difference. But it really does, because when people are in Washington, D.C., they're looking at like spreadsheets and legislation, and there's no people in it. You can lose your humanity. And yes, we really see people's humanity come through, and that make an impact on policy. What's the most inspiring moment of humanity that you've seen recently? Ooh,
this is a good question. The most inspiring moment of humanity. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, there are so many examples, which is really heartening, because right now, if you take a look at the news, it can be very disheartening. But I think I will tell you what's been really inspiring me, and that is the fact that Giving Tuesday is coming up, and we've asked our members to share stories about why they are giving back. You know, what are they doing to stay engaged? How do they keep marching, as we say at Moms Rising? And in just one day, hundreds of stories have poured in. I'm taking a look. I'm going through them right now. And it's amazing. These are substantive, heartfelt, you know, just really moving personal stories about why people are getting up every day and, you know, getting back in to, you know, into the game to speak up and share their own stories and sign the petitions and come to Capitol Hill or, you know, write their blog posts. You know, people are finding it in them to, you know, get through, you know, the kind of everyday things that we have to do and still find time to gather and organize and speak out.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, that is what is inspiring about humanity these days.
Yeah. Yeah, that is inspiring. So we have Thanksgiving coming up, but also Giving Tuesday. And what are you thinking about Giving Tuesday and Moms Rising and all of that?
So Giving Tuesday, in case people don't know, it's the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. I'm sorry, I mentioned it before, but now I can fill in the story. It started in 2012 as a specific day for nonprofits to kind of get the spotlight. It follows in the footsteps of Black Friday after Thanksgiving, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday. So we're all familiar with those, kind of shopping days. Giving Tuesday is a day for not only giving donations to nonprofits, but also a day of volunteerism. And it's quickly become annually one of the single biggest days of giving back to the community and fundraising for nonprofits.
And I'm ready. I'm like, and what's happening with Moms Rising?
What that means for Moms Rising this year, because of those amazing stories that people have, we've decided to focus Giving Tuesday, put the spotlight right back on our members, and ask them to share their stories about why they keep marching, why they are organizing in their communities, and you know, how they found their personal power amplified by being part of this movement. I'm smiling looking through these stories because people are very clear. They are very specific and very clear about what is keeping them going. I'll read you one of these stories. Until every American has access to the full value of the Constitution, every child has solid nutrition and a sound education, everyone is free to love their partner of their choice without risking death or unemployment, I will keep marching.
Oh my God, I love that.
Oh, and we have hundreds of those.
Oh my gosh, can other people read them somewhere?
Absolutely. We'll be sharing these on our blog. We will be turning them into social media posts. Over the next couple weeks between now and November 28th, which is when Giving Tuesday is, we'll be spotlighting these stories so people will have a chance to read them and then we'll have a chance to share their own. We'll be sharing links. The link is up on our blog right now if you want to come take a look at momsrising.org/blog. But if you're on our email list, you will see this several times coming in your emails over the next couple of weeks. If you follow us on Facebook or on Twitter, you'll see a link there. So there are a lot of opportunities for you to read and to share your own story, because I know so many of our listeners are really active in their own communities, too. We want to spotlight you as well.
I love it. I love it. And can you just talk in closing about whether or not you see moms having power, political power?
Oh, it's incredible. You know, I think since the beginning days of Moms Rising, we've seen how moms organizing and coming together are more than just a political football. You know, we're more than just a talking point. We can actually make change. Politicians know that they have to answer to their constituents, and they know that moms control, you know, household budgets, and we control, you know, taking kids to the doctor, and moms are community leaders. And so moms are really the voices that lawmakers need to listen to when they're making policies that are going to impact us all. And so we've seen, during my time at Moms Rising, I've been really inspired to see how the growth of the movement has led to the growth of power in the voices of moms and families. I'm so excited to see what's going to happen in 2018. We've seen that the voices of moms have made such a difference for passing health care, for stopping the repeal of health care more times than we can count now, for passing things like paid sick days and paid family leave in states and counties and cities all over the country. It's been really inspiring. I cannot wait to see what's to come in 2018. We just saw women power and mom power in the election a few weeks ago. I think in 2018, we're only going to see that power grow.
Yay! Growing power! 2018, growing power. Everybody go to momsrising.org. Check us out on Facebook at momsrising.org also, and on Twitter at momsrising. And Anita, thank you for all you do. I'm so excited about Giving Tuesday. Yay!
Me too. Thank you, Kristen.
Thanks so much for tuning in as we tackle the top topics facing our nation in a way that requires a disclaimer. Views expressed on this show are those of the individual speakers and should not be attributed to Moms Rising, to this station, or to any news or social media service that may disseminate a recording of this show to the the public or to any segment of the public. Boom! You know you love listening to a show that requires a disclaimer because it means it's a hot topics and it's news you can use. So we hope to talk with you again next week.